Khoonie, The Crimes of India is a thoroughly researched podcast that uses publicly available documents, reports, and books and associated media to provide listeners with a complete picture of the week's case. The following content is often graphic and regularly uncomfortable. Mentions of assault, bodily harm, and death may follow. Khoonie, The Crimes of India does not condone any actions mentioned in the episode. Minors are advised to exercise caution before proceeding. Thank you.
Augusts are chaotic in India. The weather alternates between insufferably humid to cool and pleasant depending on the rains. Monsoon is in full swing over most of the country. But by the end of August 2017, a completely different kind of storm was brewing all over North India. Angry protesters were gathering by the lakhs in the small city of Panchkula in Haryana. They had virtually taken over the city. They encamped wherever they could find open space. So markets, roads, stadiums, pavements, everything was fair game. You know how once in a while we all have to put up with obnoxious relatives who just take over your house? They leave their clothes all over the place, they don't help with the dishes, they never take the garbage out, despite contributing almost disproportionately to all the garbage in the house. Yeah, this was more or less like that. For those unfamiliar with Indian geography, Haryana is a state in northern India. The situation got tense enough for the governments of three states to swing into action. Haryana and the neighboring Punjab and Chandigarh declared lockdowns. Internet and phone services were snapped. In India, local governments can prohibit assembly of more than four people at a time if there is danger to human life, health, or safety, or disturbance to public tranquility, or a riot, or a fray. All of this happens under Section 144 of Code of Criminal Procedure. And I'm only elaborating this for our international listeners because given the volatile political situation in India over the last year, even kids here are well aware of Section 144. Despite the prohibitory orders, the mob of protesters refused to calm down. In one of the news articles I read during my research, the reporter puts it very, very succinctly. Quote, "You can sense when a crowd turns into a mob and a riot starts. The crowd goes restless, the eye listless. It seems hundreds of men and women are awaiting directions from something or somewhere," unquote. Along with the protesters, there was also heavy deployment of police and paramilitary forces. The otherwise quiet, residential, upper middle class, and since I've been here a couple of times, I will say almost uneventful town of Panchkula, was now heavily fortified and seemed primed for war.
War came on 25th August 2017. From this point onwards, we can officially stop referring to the crowd as quote-unquote protesters and start calling them rioters, because the crowd went berserk and went on a rampage, setting fire to vehicles, buildings, and anything that came in their way. The security personnel first retaliated with tear gas and water cannons, and then when that failed to stop the riot, they switched to arms. The carnage in the meanwhile had spread to neighboring areas in the states of Punjab, Rajasthan, Uttar Pradesh, and even the capital city of Delhi. And bear in mind, all of this was happening in India while prohibitory orders were in force and there was heavy paramilitary deployment. By the time the mayhem ended, about 41 people had died. In the following months, blame would shift around within the administration. People would blame the Haryana state government, police, central government, and they would all be right. But at the end of the day, the root cause of the destruction was the man the crowd had gathered to support in the first place. Gurmeet Ram Rahim Insan, head of the Dera Sacha Sauda, who had just been convicted of raping two women by a court in Panchkula. Namaste, Namaskaram. Welcome to another episode of Khuni. In today's episode, and probably the next one as well, we will be telling you a story of a cult headed by a megalomaniacal godman. Wow, that's quite a mouthful. I know, it's a tale as old as time, but we promise, the story is as gripping as it is tragic. Gurmeet Ram Rahim ruined many lives for power and money. He was involved in every nefarious activity under the sun. Seriously, the man was responsible for murder, sexual assaults, abductions, possible child trafficking, extortion, land grabbing, and money laundering. He also had close links with Khalistanis, who were a separatist group based in Punjab. His reign of terror began in 1990 and ended only with his conviction in 2017. And as you could see from our introduction, like literally everything else he did, even his conviction cost lives. Now, primarily for research in this series, we relied on a book by veteran investigative journalist Anurag Tripathi called Dera Sacha Sauda and Gurmeet Ram Rahim, a decade-long investigation, along with various news articles, interviews, all of which we will link in our show notes. But we highly recommend Anurag Tripathi's book. It is the result of years of meticulous and dangerous journalism. Tripathi had to change houses at the time of his daughter's birth because he was getting death threats from Gurmeet's lackeys. And as we tell you the whole story, you will see that these were not just empty threats.
So, who was Gurmeet Ram Rahim? If you see his photos, you will see a large man with full flowing beard and long wavy hair, often in garish costumes, accessorized with long chains around his neck. Sometimes he would have a fancy headdress. The media dubbed him the Baba of Bling. There is a Bappi Lahiri joke in there somewhere, but I'm too lazy to make it.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at some of the photos you sent me. Yeah, this is a large hairy man. I know it's not okay to body shape anyone, but those arms, look at them. They have like covered with tufts of hair. It's disgusting.
Yeah, although in later photos, his arms are mysteriously smooth again. So I'm guessing laser, maybe. But this is not your average saffron or white robed guru. Okay, the man believes in bold fashion choices.
Yeah, here he is in a floral shirt. Why is there a zip across the t-shirt? Wait, oh my god, he's wearing a purple top on bright yellow dhoti pants.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Galaxy t-shirt with flowers, bright pinks, bright oranges. Whoa, is he in a full cowboy costume? I mean, is nothing sacred anymore? Where does he buy his clothes? What is even happening?
Dude, check out his Instagram page.
Oh my god! My eyes. Okay, wait. So he says he's... Am I reading this correct? Saint Dr. MSG? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, so MSG is short for Messenger of God. And he calls himself that. He also tells his followers... he also tells his followers to call him Pitaji or Father.
He's a doctor?
Sure. In the same way that I am a NASA astronaut.
What a bio. Guys, I'm reading this out. Spiritual saint, philanthropist, versatile singer, all-rounder sportsperson, film director, actor, art director, music director, writer, lyricist, DOP? The fuck is DOP?
I think it's director of photography.
Dude, this guy has some very deep-rooted issues.
Yeah, did you see the post where he's on that bike?
Ew, that's not a bike. That looks like a spawn of a Batmobile and a Game of Thrones dragon. Wait a minute. He says he designed the bike himself? What the fuck are Desi Games?
So,
I'm so confused.
Yeah, so we are going to link his Instagram page in our show notes. You have got to check this out. And speaking of the bike, it looks more like he went to one of those shops that retrofit bikes and just rattled off features that a 10-year-old boy thinks are cool in bikes.
I know, right? The bike's butt is breathing fire. Yeah. Look, that can't be safe. He has long hair. Okay, I don't know, man.
Okay.
Really check out his Instagram. It'll cheer you up.
Yeah, it'll cheer you up on a bad day. So, you know what else will cheer you up? His movies. Because as you probably gathered from his Insta bio, the man was all about making movies. And these are badly made films with like cringeworthy VFX. Yeah, there is a Messenger of God trilogy. They're all titled MSG 1, 2, and 3. There is another one called Hind Ka Napak Ko Jawab, which literally means India's answer to the impure. And I'm thinking this is a movie about the India-Pakistan conflict. The character's name is Shere Hind, which literally means Lion of India.
Dude, look at his discography. I saw some of the videos you sent
me.
It's like someone sprinkled acid on all his memes. It's amazing how the worst possible, least talented people of the world have the most confidence. Guys, please, please check out his songs. Even if you don't understand Hindi, just look up the videos for laughs.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt a little dirty watching them. You know, like I felt I needed to take a shower or purge myself. This is not a comment on the quality of songs or the videos, okay? It's just that it's a little difficult to watch them knowing all the things that he has done.
Please, bro. It's not like there's some deep, meaningful shit. By themselves, the music is shit and the videos are cringy. And this is even without imagining the number of people he must have exploited to make these stupid, shitty videos.
Totally. So let's begin with the story. Gurmeet Ram Rahim was born to a rich landowning family in the village of Gurusar Moria in Rajasthan on August 15th, 1967. So if you go to Dera Sacha Sauda's website, you will find a glowing tribute dedicated to this man. The description says that Gurmeet was always a special child. Yeah. I'm quoting here. From a very tender age, his deeds hinted at the fact that he wasn't an ordinary child. Soon his parents realized that he wasn't merely a child, but the image of God. And thus, they never hurt him physically or verbally, which is a weird thing to say. It also goes on to say that as a child, he was very gifted, and that he excelled in his studies, at sports and co-curricular activities. He was also extremely generous with other less privileged kids. And this is a weird brag, but the description makes a special mention of how Gurmeet had learned to drive a tractor at 8, which is illegal to say the least.
Dude, I think that's just to show like how hardcore he is. Like, but imagine, okay, like a little kid in those clothes driving a tractor and singing Punjabi songs. Bro, it's like when his mom gave me milk or something, he used to be like, Mom, no, ew, give me beer or at least Red Bull. I want Red Bull.
And needless to say, all of this is a steaming pile of bullshit. I mean, not the part where his parents never beat him, we honestly don't know. But if we go by my father's stories of his own childhood, this is probably not true. Apparently, old-timey fathers were firm believers in spare the rod, spoil the child. So I doubt Gurmeet's father made an exception, especially for a kid like him, because Gurmeet wasn't actually academically or in any other way gifted. Gurmeet's unremarkable education ended after high school itself. Bear in mind that as the son of a landowner in Rajasthan, Gurmeet was extraordinarily privileged by Indian standards. So if he is not studying any further, it means no amount of money, threats, or cajoling worked on this boy. Also, Gurmeet was hanging out with all kinds of antisocial elements. His closest friend was Gurjant Singh. Gurjant Singh would later go to jail for murdering his own uncle. And this wasn't even the worst crime he would commit in life, but more on that later. In the meanwhile, worried by how his son was straying in life, Gurmeet's father took him to a guru. this guru was Shah Satnam. Shah Satnam headed a small religious sect called Dera Sacha Sauda. Now, let's press pause on Gurmeet's story for a little while and go all the way back to the year 1891 to a place called Balochistan. Today, this area is in Pakistan. A young man called Khema Mal was born in 1891. 14 years later, something would prompt the young Khema Mal to travel east to modern-day Punjab in search of a guru or a spiritual teacher. He would find one in Baba Sawan Singh, who was then the head of the Radha Swami Satsang Vyas, a major religious sect in Punjab today.
I know this sect. So like, I had a boss who was a member of this. And they used to disappear for days saying that they went to a satsang. Like, they wouldn't have their phone with them and all. And what the hell do you do in a satsang? What is it?
Satsang is like a religious congregation. You assemble, you sing songs, you eat some prasad, you know, religious offerings, stuff like that.
Awesome.
Yeah. So fun fact about the Radha Swami Satsang, Shahid Kapoor apparently is a member of this sect. And for those who don't know who that is, please look him up or at least Google the movie Heather. You know, I promise you will not be disappointed. Anyway. Guru Sawan Singh would rename Khema Mal as Shah Mastana. Shah Mastana would eventually establish Dera Sacha Sauda in 1948 in the town of Sirsa in Haryana. Dera Sacha Sauda loosely translates to abode of fair deal or abode of the true deal. Shah Mastana wanted this to be an egalitarian movement. So it was open to everybody, regardless of religion, caste, and gender. There were only three rules for the members. Rule number one, become a vegetarian. Number two, renounce drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. And three, no adultery or illicit sex. He propagated his unique method of meditation called Naam. Naam means name in English. The idea was to chant Sadhguru's name over and over again. So Sadhguru means the true teacher, which probably refers to God. At this point, the whole idea of the Dera was simple living, high thinking. Shah Mastana wanted complete equality among the members, who called themselves Premi. Now, Premi in English means lover. I know it sounds weird to refer to God's devotees as lovers, but the concept was familiar in India because of the prevalence of the Bhakti movement.
Now, the Bhakti movement advocated personal devotion to God and was sort of a rebellion against the increasingly ritualistic and elitist turn Hinduism had started taking in medieval times. Trust me, I know all about this. I've learned Carnatic music my entire life and like... A good fifth of the songs that I learned came from this moment.
Same for Hindustani classical, which I've learned. It's pretty much similar.
Yeah. So I guess that's that. It had its impact on the music in the country. So anyway, we can't go into the whole history of the movement. But for our purposes, you just need to know that the major proponents of the Bhakti movements were the Dalits, who found themselves oppressed and marginalized within traditional Hinduism. In the caste hierarchy prevalent in India, Dalits were at the bottom. In fact, this caste system was so pervasive that even religion like Sikhism that sprung from Bhakti movement and actively rejected the caste system later found itself riddled with it. Now, Dera Sacha Sauda was another rebellion against such discrimination. It promised absolute equality and dignity to every member, so drew both Sikh and Hindu Dalits into its fold. But membership wasn't confined just to them. People from all kinds of religions, castes, and economic backgrounds joined the Dera. By 1960, Shah Mastana managed to set up 25 ashrams all over Punjab, Haryana, and Rajasthan. In 1960, the leadership of the Dera passed on to Shah Satnam, one of Shah Mastana's disciples. Shah Satnam tried to bring more economic dignity to its members. So, he expanded Dera activities to community farming and community meals. Now, this was very important to many of its members, a lot of whom happen to be landless laborers, often earning meager wages. This was a step towards self-reliance. Many Dera followers from this time say that Shah Satnam was rigid about not accepting any donations or alms from either members or outsiders. See, we can't be sure of this because besides community farming, Dera also imparted skills to his members. For example, there was a packaging plant with the Dera and members used to sell packaged food in the market. There were early signs of economic prosperity, but even so, there was no doubt that under Shah Satnam as well, the focus of Dera Sacha Sauda was upliftment of its members. They wanted to equalize the privilege. Now, let's come back to Gurmeet. His family joined the Dera Sacha Sauda sometime in the 1970s when Gurmeet was still a child. If you remember earlier, we said Gurmeet was not doing much with his life. So his father thought exposure to Dera's spiritual teachings would probably have a positive impact on his son. But by all accounts, Gurmeet was least interested in religion or even spirituality. Dude, he deserved a few tight spanks on his bottom. That's what he deserved.
Yeah.
But Gurmeet tagged along with his father though when they visited the Dera in Sirsa. After he stopped his studies, Gurmeet was employed by the Dera to do odd jobs. For example, like working in the fields. His troublemaking ways did not stop even when he was at the Dera. Some former members even say that Shah Satnam used to scold him now and then. And during his time at the Dera, he got married and had 3 children, 2 girls and a boy. He was still completely unmoved by the teachings of the Dera. But he was seeing a different kind of potential for this group altogether. This is also probably the first sign of ambition that we see in Gurmeet. In 1990, Shah Satnam wished to retire and hand over the reins of the Dera to a successor. The story goes that he had 3 names in mind which were known to the core members. However, on 23rd September 1990, Gurmeet Ram Rahim was declared the head of the Dera in an announcement that shook everyone. Gurmeet was only 23 and, like I said earlier, had 0 interest in the philosophy of the Dera. Nobody could even believe that he was among the 3 contenders Shah Satnam had finalized. Now, if you look at the page devoted to Gurmeet Ram Rahim on Dera's website, there is a section titled The Prophecy of 1960. This is what it says exactly, like word to word. Shah Mastana Ji in his last satsang of January 1960 had repeatedly prophesized. Exactly after 7 years, I will come back in the form of the third body, the third master. Often people take the words of saints lightly. It is only when they come true do they realize the significance of these vachans. Okay, vachans are words and promises. Now, and the same happened with Shah Mastana Ji as well. His disciples didn't understand the significance of his words. And only when revered saint, doctor, Gurmeet, Ram, Rahim, Ji, Insan, incarnated on the 15th of August 1967, exactly after completion of the 7 said years, did the disciples understand this prophecy. Okay, I call bullshit on this.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is a convenient tale spun by Gurmeet's followers to legitimize this coup. Because that's what it seemed to be. It has always been rumored that Gurmeet's elevation was no accident. Remember Gurmeet's friend Gurjant Singh, the uncle murderer? Well, he'd gone to jail for that murder, and during his time there, became associated with Khalistanis. Now, Khalistanis, as we already told you, were separatists who wanted to secede from India and establish a separate Sikh homeland. Many Dera's followers believed that Gurmeet had let Gurjant inside the Dera sometime before the announcement. Together, they threatened Shah Satnam with a gun and basically strong-armed him into making Gurmeet the next head of the Dera. Gurmeet would repay the favor by letting him use the Dera premises to stockpile weapons and using Dera's accounts to channel funds to his cause. Gurjan Singh was killed a year later in Punjab in Mohali. It is said that Gurmeet had ordered the members to observe mourning for his friend when he heard the news. Oh, also, once Gurjan passed away, all the money he had parked with the Dera was up for grabs as far as Gurmeet was concerned.
So, the reign of Huzur Maharaj Gurmeet Ram Rahim, yes, that was his title, began at Dera Sacha Sauda from September 1919.
Stop it. No, you missed the Insan.
Yeah, Insan was the surname that he had all his followers take. It means human being, and I'll talk about it a bit later, why he did that. So, he expanded the operations of the Dera at lightning speed. In a lot of ways, he continued the tradition of absolute equality that the previous two gurus had advocated. He asked all his followers to give up their surname, like we said, and instead adopt the common surname of Insan, meaning human being. Now, surnames in India are used to identify the person's caste. And even today, caste is a social and economic currency. So asking everyone to identify only as human being would go a long way in eliminating these differences. Dr. Pramod Kumar of Institute for Development and Communication in India, who studies the phenomenon of Deras in Punjab, says this. It was neutral and caste-free in a region where caste still determines a person's pecking order in society. It gave new identity and dignity to many, especially the Dalits, that no religion ever gave them. And he was the sole proprietor of this identity. Unquote. And Dr. Kumar is right, because almost 70% of Dera members are Dalits.
Gurmeet also opened many hospitals in Punjab, Haryana and Rajasthan, including in Sirsa, where the Dera headquarters were, and Guru Sar Modia, his birthplace. He also organized blood donation camps, afforestation and cleanliness drives. Many schools, colleges and orphanages were also established.
So, a wise man once said, fake it till you make it. And Gurmeet began his time at the Dera by fervently sticking to this principle. So, many members of Dera Sacha Sauda were not happy with the change in leadership and in fact left when Gurmeet took over. But many stayed back. And it was these members that he focused on going forward. Now, we cannot overstate just how much Gurmeet lacked in skill. In order to be a religious leader, apart from charisma, you also need a little bit of substance. Now, granted, Gurmeet had charisma, but he was severely lacking in any kind of substance. So, he started out by making Dera members who had stayed back and had been close to Shah Satnam deliver sermons. He would organize these big satsangs and basically act like an MC, introducing the old-timers to the crowd and then sitting back and letting them do the heavy lifting while he simply observed.
MC Huzur Maharaja Ram Rahim Insan whatever, whatever, whatever in the house.
So, Gurmeet... So basically, this was an example of faking it till you make it, basically. Gurmeet overhauled the entire operation in the Dera, transforming it from a small, egalitarian, non-sectarian commute to a flashy, commercialized setup. It had shopping centers, movie theaters, hostels for members, and his own dwelling place. Gurmeet called his home on the Dera premises Gufa. Now, Gufa is a Hindi word which means cave. It wasn't literally a cave. Basically, it was an opulent home which came with every facility imaginable. I mean, air conditioners, flat screen TVs, plush furnishings. Imagine your worst.
No, I don't want to. I'm pretty sure in his head, Gufa is some kind of a weird metaphor for a sex dungeon. Wait, did he have a BDSM dungeon? Do we know? Oh, gross. I don't want to think about it.
Well, I don't know if he planned to use it as a sex dungeon, but he ended up doing it eventually. But I don't want to give too much away for now. That's for the next episode. For now, let's focus on his plans. So for all his plans, Gurmeet needed money. Barely a year or so into his appointment as the chief of the DERA, Gurmeet wanted to gain control of his finances. And to do that, he committed what is probably his first murder. So this brings us to a man called Fakir Chand. Now, Fakir Chand had been a loyal DERA member since the time of Shah Satnam. He had sold his property in his native land and relocated to Sirsa with his wife to be in the DERA. Fakir Chand and his wife were childless and they devoted their entire time in the service of DERA Sacha Sauda. After his wife's death in 1985, Fakir Chand's whole life revolved around the DERA. From a mere volunteer, he worked his way up to the manager of the DERA by the time Gurmeet had taken over. And one day in 1992, Fakir Chand simply disappeared. Can you imagine the grip Gurmeet would have had on the members of the DERA by this point? The DERA manager had simply gone missing and there wasn't even a peep from anybody. Only his friend Ram Bishnoi cared. Now, Ram Bishnoi had joined DERA Sacha Sauda at the insistence of Fakir Chand, but had quit when Gurmeet had taken over. Nevertheless, the friends remained close, and according to Bishnoi, they were like brothers. So Bishnoi used to visit Sirsa often and visit Fakir Chand fairly regularly. On one of these visits, Bishnoi was told that Fakir Chand had simply left and no one knew where. Bishnoi thought this was odd. Fakir Chand would have at least talked to Bishnoi if he had planned to leave the DERA. So Bishnoi embarked on what would prove to be a very lonely struggle for justice for his friend. First, he started investigating on his own, questioning some DERA members secretly, which confirmed his worst fears. Many said that they thought that Fakir Chand had been killed. So Bishnoi went to the police to register an FIR for murder. But there was just one problem. There was no dead body. So the police asked him to file a missing persons complaint instead. A few years later, some DERA members laid siege to the police station, accusing the police of killing one of their members. And I'm not exaggerating when I say siege. They burned all the records, including the missing persons complaint. And this was back in 1992. So next year, Bishnoi filed another missing persons report. And this time, he approached officers higher in rank. Once again, nothing. Between 1993 and 2004, Bishnoi spoke to many DERA members who told him that Fakir Chand was not missing, but definitely dead. Apparently, Gurmeet had wanted details of cash reserves and assets held in the DERA's name. And when Fakir Chand would not oblige, he had been killed. But of course, nobody was willing to come on record because everyone was scared for their life. In the absence of any proof and no witnesses willing to testify, there was little Bishnoi could do with his limited resources. So he made one last attempt in the year 2004 when he filed a third missing persons report. But again, nothing was done. At this point, it is abundantly clear that the police in Sirsa were either on Gurmeet's payroll or completely intimidated by him. The Baba seemed untouchable and all hope seemed lost.
It seems far-fetched that some Baba from a small town nobody even knew about outside of Haryana would have this level of clout. But Gurmeet had planned his rise meticulously. One of the first things he did after taking over was understanding the value of money. So DERA used to have a steady income from its farming and packaging activities even before Gurmeet came into the scene. But Shah Satnam's objective was to uplift the DERA's most marginalized survivor followers. He understood that no matter how much religious or caste equality he creates within the DERA, outside of it, where the followers lived their lives, they would never be respected as long as they were poor. But Gurmeet did not have any reformist agenda when he set about aggressively accumulating wealth. To him, followers were just cash cows. He advised them to transfer their cash and assets in the name of the Dera. So if they had land in other places, they were asked to sell it and purchase land closer to Sirsa, which was then acquired by Gurmeet. My God! Unlike Shah Satnam, Gurmeet pursued donations, especially from abroad, very aggressively. Some followers who lived on Dera land were doing so by leasing the property at premium rates from the Dera. And this was when they had sold their own land to Dera at a throwaway price. What is even happening?
Yeah, quite a scam he was running.
Farming on Dera land had continued under Gurmeet as well, but he managed to extract money from farm produce in a different way. He would auction off bags of produce to his followers, insisting that the produce was blessed. And thus, it was prasad. Gross. So, whoever bid the highest would earn the most grace from him. Look, in Hinduism and Sikhism, prasad is an edible religious offering that is distributed to devotees after it was offered to the deity. Usually, it is stuff like fruits or sweets. Prasad is never, and I mean never, ever, ever auctioned for profit. This is a completely new shit Gurmeet pulled out of his ass, literally. Dera followers would bid on these sacks of vegetables for even as high as 2 or 3 lakhs. Oh my God, that's around, I don't know, like 1800-1900 USD, or right about now, I'm not sure. But a lot of money for a sack of vegetables. Get that through your head. And if this isn't a ringing endorsement for atheism, I don't know what else. Now, there were other privileges Gurmeet would auction. For example, he had a theater built on Dera premises where his sermons were replayed, or sometimes where he delivered his sermons. And the seats were all auctioned. The bid for seats closest to him was the highest, and followers had to pay for the privilege of his proximity. Oh man. Wait, are these the same places where he screened his own shitty movies?
Yeah, eventually, when he would make them.
Oh my God. Anyway, so he also built factories in Sirsa for products like biscuits, tomato sauce, and candy with the brand name Father. This was because Gurmeet's followers used to refer to him as Pitaji, a Hindi word for father. Slowly, he expanded the operations to include almost 100 plus products and formally entered into the FMCG sector. Oh my, now I know where Patanjali got his ideas from.
Yeah.
Those who are not Indian, please Google Patanjali Baba. you will not be disappointed. Trust us. Anyway, so these guys, this father brand, even set up an e-commerce portal, and all the products were heavy on religious branding, which was miles removed from the non-sectarian simple setup Dera Sacha Sauda was known for until 1990. He made some of the followers, managers, and investors in these ventures, which saw only meager and extremely regular profits at best. Most of the products were sold to Dera followers at the end of the day. What a scam, man! Like, you should start naming it. It's not Ponzi schemes. You should call them Gurmeet schemes. What a rubbish. Okay, this doesn't end here. There is more. Gurmeet made a rule that every family must donate 15% of their income to the Dera, a sum that should be deposited every time someone came to visit. Isn't he already taking all their money? What is this? What is happening?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh God, he based this on the practice of zakat in Islam, except there you donate directly to the needy and not to some weird predatory cult with a hairy baba. Ugh.
Yeah.
And over and above this 15%, he told his followers to save petty cash in piggy banks and deposit the money every time they visited the Dera. Oh my God. Anyway, I'm not saying oh my God. There's no point saying anything at this point. So essentially, there were a plethora of schemes to fleece the Dera followers in every single way possible.
Okay, so this was about finances. The next step was to exercise complete control over the followers. So first of all, Gurmeet set up a spy system within the Dera. Apparently, one out of every four disciples would be selected to spy on the rest of the group. No one knew who the spy was, and he, she would report directly to Gurmeet's selected henchmen. This is an effective way to ensure both compliance and silence among the followers. Also, how communist regime took over China, Nazis took over Germany. In fact, imagine any dictatorial regime anywhere in the world, and chances are they use this trick in their rise to power. Not really how you should be establishing a sect to promote equality and self-respect in the world. Let's just say that. Yeah. Secondly, he made it clear that there would be consequences for dissent. People who left the Dera were stalked and hounded by Dera henchmen and sometimes even murdered. The most common method was to just run them over with a car and make it look like a hit and run. So Gurmeet's code word for eliminating dissenters and deserters was Kanta Nikal Do, which means remove the thorn. Yeah, he was like a bad Bollywood villain from the 80s in many ways.
Fuck, that escalated so quickly, dude.
Yeah, escalated pretty quickly. His favorite method of control was torture. Remember when we talked about Fakir Chand a while back? So in a sting operation, Khatta Singh, Gurmeet's former driver, revealed to Anurag Tripathi, you know, the journalist we talked about, whose book we referred to. Yeah. So in a sting operation, Khatta Singh, who was Gurmeet's former driver, revealed to Anurag Tripathi and his colleague, Itmat Khan, that Gurmeet wanted to control all of Dera's assets and money immediately after taking over. As manager, Fakir Chand had been managing these on behalf of the Dera. He refused to allow Gurmeet access to this money because it was supposed to be for the benefit of the members. The man had served the Dera most of his life and he was not about to betray its principles now. And for this, unfortunately, he paid a very heavy price. Another sting operation with a Dera follower called Gobind Singh revealed that Fakir Chand had been taken to a secret room within the Dera. Here, he had been beaten and tortured for information. He was then taken to a field where he was beaten to death. The followers who did this, Gobind being one of them, went to Gurmeet to ask about what should be done with the dead body. At his orders, they burned the hair on his body and threw it in the canal. This sting operation was conducted in 2007. If you remember, the last FIR Bishnoi filed was in 2004, which was a missing persons report. But when the sting operation aired, Bishnoi filed another FIR in 2007. The High Court of Punjab ordered the Central Bureau of Investigation, or CBI, which is like India's version of FBI. So the CBI launched a preliminary inquiry into the case in 2009, 2 years later. Next year, the CBI converted the preliminary inquiry into an FIR for murder for Fakir Chand. The FIR named 6 people in total, including Gurmeet. But after 9 months of investigation, a closure report was filed by CBI saying that there was total lack of corroborating witnesses in the case. Basically, no one was willing to back up Gobind Singh's so-called extrajudicial confessions. And this was weird to me, right? Because that they would call this an extrajudicial confession. Because besides the sting operation, CBI had also interrogated Gobind Singh, where he said pretty much the same thing. So there was a proper judicial confession as well. And this was back in 2007 itself. CBI had not taken any cognition of the matter until 2009, right? When it was practically forced to by the High Court. So obviously, when I read about the closure report in the case, I was very confused. Until I read about a plea for re-examination of the case filed by an extremely persistent Bishnoi, again with the Punjab and Haryana High Court, 3 years later in 2013. So just to sum up how much Bishnoi has pursued this whole matter, he has filed three missing persons reports, and this is his second FIR for murder for his friend. So Bishnoi's petition shed some light on the CBI's bizarre conduct. It stated that after the CBI had reopened the investigation into the case in 2010, Gurmeet Ram Rahim saw the inquiry going against him. So he started complaining against Satish Dagar, who was the first investigating CBI officer. And he put political pressure on higher authorities within the CBI to hand over the investigation to some other officer who he felt would steer the inquiry in his favor. So accordingly, the top brass at CBI replaced Dagar with a more pliant officer. Meanwhile, Dera also got to Gobind Singh, and he was forced to retract his earlier confession to the CBI. So now the whole extrajudicial thing makes more sense. If the confession to the CBI had been retracted by Gobind Singh, all they would have is a sting operation, which I'm probably sure would not hold much water in court, lacking, you know, corroborating evidence.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, true. And also, this is such typical Indian CBI behavior. Replace whoever you want with whoever you want.
Absolutely.
Those Indians who know what I'm talking about, leave us a thumbs up somewhere.
Right. So within 9 months, the investigation was closed. Bishnoi's 2013 petition is still languishing in Punjab and Haryana High Court, and no action has been taken on it so far.
Now let's look at the subject of Gurmeet's political connections, which is another way he spread his influence even outside the Dera. Gurmeet had expanded the Dera sizably, and a lot of his followers, in fact almost 70% of Dera members, were Dalits. Now the irony of being Dalit in India is that although they face socio-economic marginalization, they are wooed in every election cycle to shore up vote bases. And Gurmeet took full advantage of the situation with crores of followers willing to do his bidding. He was basically the kingmaker in Punjab and Haryana. So there is no surprise that he was approached by all major political parties. The Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP, which is currently in power at the center, had sought and won the support of the Dera in 2014 national elections. Prominent party members have gone to the Dera Sacha Sauda to personally seek Gurmeet's quote-unquote blessings for elections. Oh man. Also, this won't mean anything to listeners abroad, but Indian listeners will be interested to know that Amit Shah was one of these leaders. So before that, in 2007, Gurmeet supported Congress during state elections in Punjab. And in return, he was given a Z+ security cover by the Congress government. Security covers are reserved for politicians, some categories of bureaucrats, or if a civilian's life is in danger. Z+ in India is the second highest level of security cover, and is only afforded to a handful of VVIPs. It has 36 personnel, including 10+ NSG commando and police personnel. The problem is that a security cover is oftentimes seen as a status symbol by politicians and babus in India. Gurmeet most definitely did not need it. And that is because this guy had his own private militia. Now, I couldn't find details on exactly when Gurmeet thought about raising a private militia. In fact, from what I've been able to read about it, it seems that the whole point was to keep its existence shrouded in mystery. His militia was called Kurbani Dasta, which literally means sacrifice wing. Pretty much like the name suggests, the whole purpose of those recruited in the wing was to kill and die for Gurmeet Ram Rahim. So the riot we talked about at the beginning of the episode was because Gurmeet had been convicted of rape in 2017. Immediately after the conviction, multiple letters were received by journalists, Haryana police, Dera members who had left and opposed Gurmeet, and witnesses who testified in the trial against them. Basically, these were threats, making it clear that about 200 men were ready to die and kill for their quote-unquote Pitaji, or father, as Gurmeet was called, and targeted not the people involved in his conviction, but also their families. This Qurbani Dasta was set up with the help of a couple of Dera members who were ex-military. It mostly comprised of orphans who were a part of the Dera since childhood. Now, these guys were subjected to a grueling regimen of physical, spiritual, and combat training. They were taught how to use small firearms like pistols, assemble petrol bombs, create panic in a crowd, and escape unnoticed. If this frightens you, well, it should. The riots in 2017 were supposed to be engineered. We will link some of the interviews of the followers who had gathered in Sirsa and Panchkula to protest Gurmeet's conviction. And some of the things they said were spine-chilling. One woman can be heard saying that if their Pitaji is sent to prison, they will, and this is what she said, they will obliterate India from the face of the earth. Look, obviously, you and I now know it's an exaggeration, but this kind of gives us a whole picture of how much hold Gurmeet had on his followers. He was getting all these people to not just follow him, but also give up their property, money, time, and basically surrender their lives to him. He had managed to convince about 200 people to shed blood for him or die trying. And this is no mean feat. There was some serious psychological abuse going on at the Dera, and it was all pervasive and very systematic. And Gurmeet was pushing the boundaries in his experiments to control Dera followers.
Hans Raj Chauhan and his parents were Dera members since the 70s. They did not live in Sirsa, but still paid regular visits to meet with Gurmeet all the way from Kota in Rajasthan. Now, Hans Raj himself started attending and volunteering at the Dera since 1996, when he was formally inducted. This had not been his choice. Gurmeet had met his parents and pushed them to send their son full-time at the Dera. He insisted that Hans Raj was special and he had been born to serve a higher spiritual purpose. Obviously, his parents were highly reluctant to send their only son away and dedicate his life to service alone. Hans Raj himself wanted to study and make something of himself, possibly support his parents and give them a good and comfortable life. But Gurmeet kept hounding them. It's safe to assume that they may have been a little scared of him as well. Either way, the family relented and Hans Raj came to stay at the Dera for good. He was hardworking, loyal, and highly talented. He was a gifted singer. So Gurmeet used to take him along on various religious satsangs. So as we said earlier, satsang is a religious congregation. There's a lot of sermons and devotional singing involved. And at these satsangs, Hans Raj became very popular. One day in the year 2000, a 19-year-old Hans Raj was summoned by Gurmeet and told, quote, "Tum par rehmat ho gayi hai." Meaning in English, you have been blessed with divine grace. But to earn the grace, Hans Raj had to undergo a small operation. Now, this was weird, obviously. Oh, but no. Hans Raj...
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, no.
But Hans Raj talks about how Gurmeet had completely brainwashed them, especially the younger, more impressionable members of Dera. They were completely isolated from their families, their education, contact with the outside world, and even contact among other Dera members was heavily restricted. So Hans Raj bought into the ruse. But even he didn't know what he was signing up for. Hans Raj was directed to a hospital in Gurusar Moria in Rajasthan, which we've mentioned before, Gurusar Modia was Gurmeet Ram Rahim's birthplace. So there, Gurmeet had built a super speciality hospital in the name of Dera. Hansraj met two doctors, Dr. Garg and Dr. Singh. He was to tell them that he had been blessed. That was the code word. And then they would know what to do next. When Hansraj met the doctors, they were very friendly. He was offered a cold drink. And when he drank it, he felt extremely dizzy and became unconscious. He says that he couldn't even finish the whole bottle.
Oh, God.
When he woke up, he was horrified to see his private parts in bandages. He had not known what he had signed up for. He was in a lot of pain. Basically, Hansraj Chauhan had been surgically castrated. Later, when this was investigated by the CBI, the medical report stated that Chauhan's scrotal sacs were found to be, quote, completely empty, no testes present, and that, quote, linear scars horizontally placed, measuring approximately 1 inch on both sides of the scrotal sac were present. So needless to say, this incident ruined Chauhan's life. I mean, he was only 19 years old at this point. He was just a boy. He came back to Sirsa dazed and confused and in an immense amount of pain. The pain would last a lifetime. Chauhan would describe the pain as the pain of 1,000 bee stings. He begged Gurmeet to allow him to go home, but no dice. So one day, his parents came to visit him in Sirsa and he told them what had happened. His poor parents were shell-shocked, but they were determined to take him away. They too begged and promised to remain associated with the Dera even back home in Kota if they could take their son home. After a long time, after a lot of persuasion, Gurmeet finally relented. Hansraj talks about how even when they went home, they were kept under surveillance at Gurmeet's orders so that they wouldn't talk about what had been done to him. The news spread, of course. I mean, you can't keep such something like this under wraps. Hansraj's life became very difficult. And we don't want to go into a lot of detail because we don't have the time, but we highly recommend reading Anurag Tripathi's book for more insight into Hansraj's life after the incident.
This obsession with castration became a thing in the Dera. Gurmeet raised a whole cadre of brahmacharis, meaning celibate men.
So this, if you remember, the same thing happened with Heaven's Gate, right? Those in the US would know about it. However, if I'm remembering correctly, in Heaven's Gate, castration was at least voluntary. Not that I endorse any kind of genital mutilation, but the big difference between drugging, there is a big difference between drugging and threatening cult members to get castrated and gently suggesting that they do so.
Yeah, so in Heaven's Gate, as far as I remember, and people can correct me later if they want, but the thing is, Marshall Applewhite, who was like their starter, like their cult head, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He got himself castrated first because the point of Heaven's Gate was that all of them will go to some planet after they die. So, and then people started getting themselves castrated. This was not like this.
Yeah, there must have been some kind of persuasion, at least peer pressure to get castrated. But I know that not everybody in the cult got castrated either way.
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost like, see, the head got it done. It'll be nice if you guys can get it done. That kind of a thing.
Yeah,
they never expressly said that, you know, get it done anyway. Now, Gurmeet wanted that these men should not be able to have any kind of sexual inclinations at all and should only be at the disposal of Gurmeet. And he convinced them by telling them that getting castrated will bring them closer to God. See? Same, some dumbfuck reason.
Yeah. But this was just what he told them. The real reason was completely different. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Not everyone got on board with this, of course. I'm pretty sure. Many refused. But these members were tortured by Gurmeet's henchmen till they changed their minds. Others readily agreed. And when the matter was investigated, it was estimated that about 400 to 500 male members of the Dera Sacha Sauda had undergone castration. Whoa, 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 whoa. That's a huge number. And remember all those hospitals we told you about that Dera had set up under Gurmeet? It was these hospitals that would be used to carry out these illegal castrations. In India, and I'm sure in a lot of other, many, many countries all over the world, masculinity carries so many premiums that news of castration would open these men to social ridicule and even boycott. And this is what happened to Hansraj also. Even if the men somehow found acceptance, the Dera members would have made sure their lives became extremely difficult. Hansraj lost his friends, relatives, and became virtually unemployable because of Dera's interference. This was an unreal level of megalomania displayed by Gurmeet. To destroy someone's life for no good reason other than a whimsical fancy that doing so would make them loyal followers shows extreme narcissism. It also shows just how much Gurmeet had managed to brainwash Dera members. There was a significant level of Stockholm syndrome going around as well. Many of the men he castrated became his own personal hitmen and carried out many torture sessions and murders on his behalf. In 2014, Punjab and Haryana High Court officially stated that the castrations had been done at the behest of Gurmeet Ram Rahim. And moving on, Gurmeet's hypocrisy was astounding on many levels. On one hand, he was resorting to dangerous methods to eliminate his followers' sexuality. But on the other hand, he himself was indulging his sick, perverted sexual fantasies with the female members of the Dera. It's not hard to guess what he did, obviously, but we'll stop here and cover the rape charges and everything else in the next episode. This had already been a factually very heavy episode so far. So next episode, besides the rape cases, we'll also look at Gurmeet's attempts to silence those who sought to expose his nefarious activities and obviously his inevitable downfall. Well, that's it for now. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please write in to us. If there is any confusion about the terms, Hindi words, legal jargon, names of places, whatever, just you know our email ID now. Just write in to us. We will clarify as best as we can. Also, we had a great time filming the AMA. You can catch that on our Insta TV. Or is that IGTV? Yeah, it's IGTV.
Yeah, it was fun. So thank you for listening. Thank you for engaging with us. Thank you for all your feedback. Stay safe, stay sane. Remember to wash those hands. We know we took a break the past week, but this week as a bonus, we are releasing both the parts of Dera Sacha Sauda at the same time. So the next episode will be released maybe tomorrow or the day after that, but sometime this week. Thank you for everything. Bye.
Bye-bye.